to be to have a discussion with Department of Public Works together with the Department of Correctional Services on developments around Ceres van Reinsdorp and Brandvlei. We have had discussions previously, so it will just really be progress reports ongoing. It shouldn't be too long, I don't think. The second agenda item was, or is, as everybody is aware, a discussion around the feasibility or otherwise of installing technology to assist us with management. We had had discussions with various stakeholders to get their views, and we thought that today we might have a discussion with the department if it wished to do so. And pretty soon the committee will sit and, having considered all the views from the various stakeholders, decide how it's going to move the process forward. So we will deal with the Public Works DCS issue initially and allow these Public Works to move if they want to or to stay. And if there is a discussion on the CCTVs, we'll have that one. If there isn't, that's also fine. But that's how we're proposing to deal with these matters. And hopefully by 12 o'clock, we should have concluded our business. I will allow the COO to introduce her team in a minute. But I do know that from the information before me from the Department of Public Works, we've been joined by Ms. Ellie van der Werven. She's the Director of Projects from the Cape Town Regional Office. And we have got Mr. Peter Chaipasco, I apologize if I am pronouncing it incorrectly, who's the acting DDG Key Accounts Management, as well as Mr. Fred Johnson, who has been with us for a while. And I think Mr. Johnson is based at the regional office, Cape Town. I'm not sure if there are other delegates from DPW. If there are, any one of you could introduce them to us, including the leader of the delegation, but that's what we have before us. And then we will hand over to our colleagues. Oh, we do have the inspecting judge, Mr. Raja and Mr. D'Souza are here. And I see apologies, so we'll ask Raja or D'Souza to talk to that if you want to, and then we'll hand over to Correctional Services to introduce or to inform us of people that should and are not, or people that are and we are not aware of. So let me hand over to DPW in the first instance to complete the introduction of your delegation.
Honourable Chairperson, good morning. Honourable Members, good morning to Peter Chiapasco, Acting DDG Key Account Management. Completing the delegation from Public Works is Mr. Obed Molotsi. He is the Chief Director of Projects for the department, and the lessons learned on the two prisons we're speaking to today, the way forward and how it's rolled out on other projects in the future. If there's questions in how we massify the benefits and the lessons learned, Mr. Molotsi will then take it in the context of the broader construction environment from Public Works side. We also have colleagues from the Ministry, Mr. Mpoma Shaba, and I think I saw Mr. Sabelo here with us as well as participants in the process. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
So much, sir. Mr. Raja, is there any additions or corrections to the delegation that I've read out?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Apologies from the judge and the CEO, but myself and Mr. Leonard D'Souza, the manager of inspections, represent the inspectorate today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Let's hand over to you, ma'am. I'm assuming that you're leading the delegation.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members, colleagues. My name is Nonsikelelo Dolingana. I'm the COO in Correctional Services. On my right, I have Mr. Robert van Andrak, the DC Facilities. On my left, Mr. Tiko Mbambo, who is the DC IGR. Next to him, Mr. Terence Rasiroka, the DC Executive Management. And next to him, Mr. Gilunzi Ntlakana, who is the DC Security. I wish to tender an apology for the National Commissioner who has accompanied the Minister to the Cabinet Lekgotla. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, COO. Let's get on with the business. Then, as we indicated, the first item that we'd want to discuss is progress on three facilities specifically, Van Rensdorp, Brandvlei, and Ceres. Just to very briefly, and not get into the detail, refresh memory of our colleagues. We, as the Portfolio Committee, did an oversight visit to these facilities round about June this year. Yeah. And we had been discussing it before that, specifically Mr. Self, because he is our colleague that is based this side on a regular basis. But our observations and the report that we submitted to Parliament goes as follows, very briefly. In terms of Ceres, the project was initiated, stroke approved, whatever you want to call it, in 2008, and the cost at that time was $212 million. The anticipated completion date was the 10th of July 2010. We are now 2 years and maybe 3 months beyond that anticipated closing date. So we'd want to know what is the progress. Has it been completed? If not, why not? What is the implication in terms of the cost escalation, and where we're going to get that money to fund that? And thirdly, what are the implications and the consequences on service delivery for DCA? Because we were building those things for a purpose. So if we are 4 years down the line, or 2 years beyond our estimated closing date, what are the implications for service delivery and correctional services? So those are really the three issues we'd want you to talk to. And then, of course, you can talk to the lessons learned and how we make sure that they don't repeat themselves going forward. Bearing in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that this is not very different to what happened in the Kimberley News Centre. Delay in completion date, escalation from, I think, $200 million to about $800 million, and even when we went to visit, the telecommunications still was not up and running, so in essence they were cut off from society in that there were no telephones or planning. So it's those type of things that, as a committee, concerns us. In terms of Van Rensdorp, in 2007 we started this project, commissioned it, approved it, whatever the correct word is, at a cost of $220 million. The anticipated completion date was 2009, 12th of October. We are now at 2012 and the same questions apply. Why and the consequences of the late. And the final one is Brandvlei. It was commissioned stroke approved in 2008 at a cost of about 315.6 million rand. The anticipated completion date was the 2nd of June 2010. I speak under correction, but I think that it was eventually completed in March 2011, and the escalation there was 89.5 million rand. In other words, from the 315.6 million rand that was the initial cost, it eventually cost us an additional 89.5 or 90 million rand. And clearly somebody's going to have to explain to us, first of all, how do we fund that? And if we fund it, which projects are going to suffer in the process because we have to find that money, or do we go and get that money from Treasury, or what happens? So those are the three that we'd really want to talk to. I'm not sure how you want to present your case, but I would imagine that in the first instance DPW would want to give us their version of events around these three matters. Please do so. We will ask DCS to comment if they feel they want to comment on that matter, and then we'll open it up for members to then give their views on this matter. And as I indicated, if we could be done with this matter, it's 10:15, hopefully by 11:15. We really don't want to drag it out, but we will allow as much discussion as possible, but bearing in mind that we have other commitments after 12. So if I could hand over to the DPW team, and immediately you're done, we will ask for DCS to give us their comments and then give it to members. Thank you, sir.
Better. Good morning again. We've prepared a presentation basically at this stage on the challenges and the planning of the planning and the procurement of services for the Sierens and Van Reinsdorp area correctional facilities, and we can talk about Brandveld after that. That was really the focus that we put, because that's really where we had the problems to respond. And our purpose is to respond to the observations made by the DCS Portfolio Committee during the meeting of the 22nd of February regarding the procurement of the contractor and details of the contract for both Sierras and Van Reinsdorp Correctional Facility. The initiation and a professional team, DCS requested the provision of additional accommodation for administration and inmates to address congestion in various prisons in Van Reinsdorp and Sierras. The Registered Departmental Project Manager was appointed to lead the professional team, which comprises of private engineers, and private architects, and quantity surveyor. The appointment of the professional team was done through a routine assignment of consultant at the time, which was the roster system. Each project had a dedicated professional team in order to maximize performance and focus. The professional team members involved on a project are registered with their relevant professional counsel. DPW advertised this tender, and this is now Van Reinsdorp I'm referring to, on open procedure on the 27th of July. The procurement strategy included, inter alia, the following requirements: the CIDB grading of a HGB or a HCE, and a minimum contract participation goal percentage of a 20% was required. The cost analysis and pre-tender estimates were done by the professionally registered quantity surveyor, and the pre-tender estimate was R219,989.562. This estimate was based on the Kimberley prototype, and the pre-tender contract price adjustment was included. The tender amount that was received was R192,876,930.64, which gives us a variance of R27 million. Three tenders were received on the 12th of, I'm still talking Van Reinsdorp, were received on the 12th of September. One tender was declared non-compliant due to not meeting the minimum points for quality. A tender was disqualified, as they did not have the required CIDB grading. Therefore, the highest point score tender was recommended, as the bid adhered to all the requirements set and the tender had the required CIDB grading. The grading was a HGBPE, and the contract participation goal percentage that was tendered was 47.41%. The tender recommendation was accepted by the Bid Adjudication Committee and the tender was awarded on 12 October 2007. The site was handed over to the contractor on 7 November 2007. Further cost analysis of Van Rijnstoel, the actual tender amount, as I said initially, was 192,876.96.64. The current expenditure on the project is 275,695,477.39. The variance between the send amount and the expenditure to date is 82 million rand, which is the 30%. And the costing model applied by was based on the historical information, as well as the cost of the resources and the building at Van Rijnstoel, which is quite far from Cape Town. The variance increased due to the following: additional work requested by the user department outside the original scope, change of specifications for materials to meet client needs and enhance compliance, post sign-off of project deliverables, failure to account for topography and geographical location of the facility. DPW advertised this tender on open procedure on the 25th of April 2008. The procurement strategy included, again, the following: CIDB grading of the 8GB and a minimum for contract participation goal of 20%. Cost analysis and pre-tender estimates were done by the professional registered quantity surveyor. The pre-tender estimate was 212 million. Based on the same information and the same knowledge we had at that stage. The costing model applied, again, was based on, as I said, the historical information. The actual tender amount received was 182,712,542.62, and that variance is 29,933,864.38. 7 tenders were received for Ceres. On 28th of May, 3 tenders were disqualified as they did not have the correct CIDB grading. The highest scored tenderer was recommended as the bid adhered to all the requirements set and the tenderer had the required CIDB grading. His grading, CIDB grading was 8 GBPE, and he tendered on this case a contract participation goal of 43.7%. The tender recommendation was accepted by the Bid Adjudication Committee on the 11th of July and the site was handed over to the contractor on 5 August 2008. Actual tender amount is to repeat 182,712,542.62. The current expenditure is standing at 193,229,166.23. That variance is currently standing at 5.44%. And the variance increased due to the following: additional work requested by the user department outside the original scope, again failure to account for topography and geographical location, and there were also other changes in the spec. Most of the activities, the form of the contracts that we used, most of the activities in both the projects related to buildings and civil work. The form of the contract found to be suitable and relevant to both projects are the standard JBCC 2000 edition 4.1 March 2005. This document is not part of the original tender documentation that is referred to as the basis of the contract, as well as the special conditions of contract called mark DPW04EC. That's the number we allocate to it. The shortcomings we identified in the contract and how to overcome in the future. First of all, the sketch plan approval was duly obtained before tenders were invited. User client changes still occurred due to the fact that these facilities were of the first new generation facilities to be built, and lessons learned at Kimberley was incorporated in the building during construction phase. Enough time must be allocated for the planning phase of the project. Risk assessment of tenders to be comprehensive, as the CIDB grading is correct, but experience in a specific field may be limited. just to go into more detail, the challenge time frame between approval of sketch plans and tender documentation is often too short. Often due to pressure to get on site and show an expenditure, we really try to shorten this time, and the result is detailed planning must be done then during the contract period, and we've got to get this right. Realistic timeframes must be set and communicated. Expectations must not be created where delivery cannot take place in certain timeframes. The next challenge that we've identified is the geotechnical survey completed at the beginning of the planning was not comprehensive enough to indicate problems on soil conditions, resulting in delays and extras due to rock, high water table levels, etc. The DPW must ensure a comprehensive geotechnical survey and increase the amount of trial holes required in order to ensure that surprises in site conditions do not occur. The next challenge, the standard drawings and documents that existed were not comprehensive enough to allow planning without changes required. The lessons learned from Kimberley was incorporated during the construction phase. And the proposal is that the DPW, with the assistance of DCS, must develop comprehensive standard drawings and specifications that must only be adapted to suit the specific site. Procurement phase. A challenge, at time of the evaluation of these tenders, the method of risk assessment of contractors implemented was restricted mainly based on the CIDB grading of the contractor, and the quality criteria set that did not include for all the risk issues. The DPW has introduced a risk assessment concentrating on technical and contractual ability, as well as doing a commercial risk in line with the CIDB prescription. This must be further enhanced by developing of quality functionality criteria that are fair and objective. The other challenge, contractors that are responsive in all criteria and will pass a risk assessment but can be overcommitted if too many projects are simultaneously awarded to such a company. And it's a very difficult challenge to resolve. The DPW to engage with National Treasure and with the CIDB to develop criteria that can be used to ascertain if a proposed contractor will be overcommitted if more projects are awarded to such a contractor. Thank you. That is basically the presentation we have prepared, sir, but we're prepared to answer questions from the floor.
All right. Just to... because maybe I got caught up in the process. Where are we at in terms of Ceres, Van Rensdorp and Runflay? Have they all been completed? Have they been handed over? If you can just those, and then we'll open it up to members.
On Runflay, that was completed last year, and it was handed over to DCS.
So totally.
Totally. Can I continue?
Yes.
On Ceres, they are still busy with the second phase. They have handed over a first phase. They're still busy with a second phase. The contractor is definitely late at this stage, and he is in penalties due to the late thing. But we are busy handing over currently block by block and checking on everything as we go along. But we cannot hand over the complete facility as everything must be done now before DCS can take it over. So although blocks can be finished off, we cannot hand over the complete facility. The same is applicable to Van Rensdorp. They're currently busy with a practical completion inspection. There are one or two buildings where there are a few issues that they need to finish, but we're busy with that whole snagging, checking process at this stage. And there the contractor is also currently in penalties. If I could just add something to that, escalation on a project, and I'm talking about contract price escalation, not if you change, you know, if you add work to it, but stops at the time that the project should have contractually been completed. So that will not run over the contractually completion time. If we did give them an extension of time, which we had to do in some cases, that contractual time moves with that, but it stops there. So if there are penalties, that's also where escalation has stopped.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Does DCS wish to make comments on on series van Reisdorp and Brandplein, Benny. Yes, sir?
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I think we have a short presentation just to add from a user department's point of view the lessons learned, and I'll just take you through our major points that we want to add from our position. As I noted that ours is additional to what has been presented from Public Works, and we are focusing on our responsibilities. The issue is facilities capacity to be monitor design and construction phase by the department to be increased, so we have identified and made proposals to seriously increase our capacity internally to be able to monitor these projects, because it's a serious challenge currently. Additionally, as raised already, the appointment of two major contracts to the same contract as it's got not the experience, we feel that is something that we have to address in future, because I think that's contributed to our risks on this project. But we realize there are certain limitations in terms of treasury that that didn't allow that. The need to develop prototype drawings to shorten design and documentation period to limit also the risk. Because there was an initial prototype developed for 3,000. We need to, as we are moving to more to 500 and thousands, we need to look, all the lessons learned into that prototype needs to be re-engineered to develop standard ones for 500 and 1,000, so that we off the shelf can turn around these time frames of detailed design and the risk, as highlighted here, that we are, when you do a rush job there, you pay the penalty during the construction. So we are trying to actually manage that risk and time frames rather by saying let's have a new prototype set, and then off the shelf we can do it site specific and it can fast track our projects according to that. That's our main comments on that part. So I see, looks like I accidentally passed off. Just on from the issues further from our side, I think what is important is that we also want to limit our inputs on scope changes during construction, as the Honourable Chair pointed out to us at the previous meeting that we should lock down any changes, and that's what we are aiming to do in future projects, that we don't allow after tender documentation to allow any changes, so that we don't have the scope creep and also delays on the project. Similarly, where we can to empty the facilities rather, although where it's possible, so that we don't have a phased approach, because that actually complicates the whole process and it extends the process and escalation on the project. So where it's possible for us, it's not always the case, but where it's possible we want to what we saw the benefits at Brandplein, where we didn't have a that interference, it went much quicker. Although it started later, it was a bigger project, we ended up with a finished product. Obviously, we also had a more experienced contractor there. The site risk that was raised here, I think from our side, we already pointed out that we're willing to pay more for much more detailed site investigations. I think one of the risks that the department has, because of the large footprint, statistically, we are just more at risk of getting these surprises of soil conditions, because it basically it's nearly at every second facility we have these major challenges, but it's part of the nature. So we want to in combined exercise with Public Works on each of these site clearances to actually invest more money up front, but we will reap the benefits at the end of the project because of our very large footprint on the ground. That's just from my side.
And once again, the unintended consequences of the delays in terms of service delivery, are there any? And how are you mitigating that?
Yes, it's mitigated. What we have discussed, we've met with the region, is to the implementation and fast-tracking of on receipt of these facilities to actually shorten our time of taking over to actually fully being fully occupied. That is part of the strategy to shorten that period from that we actually get the centre. In terms of the operational management of the overcrowding, that is obviously dealt with by the region. They are managing the, because it definitely has an impact, because they would have had these centres and it would have lowered the overcrowding. But currently they are managing those risks by virtue of spreading the overcrowding on to the relevant facilities. So that's on an operational basis managed by the regional commissioner.
Thank you, Meneer. Let me hand over to the members to engage with these presentations. I note Mr. Sassau and then Mam Gwanya. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much indeed for the explanation. There seems, as you go along, to be an improvement. So the variations diminish in size and percentage as you get better at the job. And I think that's the good side of it. The bad side of it is really from Rainstorm, because, I mean, it's a sort of horror story, both in terms of the delays and the cost escalations, which amount to, if I read it correctly, over 30% of the original contract price. Now, and you must correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm looking at the monthly progress report from June 2012, and a long then list of variations or additions or what are they called? Contract instructions authorized by the departmental project manager, okay, which amount to some 82 million rand. Now, one of these alone relates to CL133 security installation change from Novita to JFE and remeasurement. That amounts alone, depending on which column you deal with, to either 33 million or 36 million rand. I would really like some explanation about why it was necessary and what the implications of that are. Then if you look at other matters over a million rand, there is a revised design for steel cell table set, CI or C1066. I say C1065. Then there was 2.8 million rands on replaced stone core floor finish with PMC floor finish. You know, some of these are very big item, big budget items. Are we to understand that these resulted from the experience in Kimberley? Could these have been anticipated? Because, you know, particularly the over 33 or 36 million rands for a security installation seems to me something that could reasonably have been anticipated and therefore mitigated. Your comments, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the explanation. Chairperson, I've got a question for DPW. On the slide 19, bullet 1 on the challenges in terms of the planning. Chair, I wanted to know if the DPW were having a challenge. Why they didn't do the survey first because you remember, Chair, when we go to see these centers, we're having a challenge that the contractor have built on the place that they were not supposed to build. So I wanted to know, Chair, that why the survey was not done before they built. The second question, Chair, is on the pay is slide 50 on care cost analysis at the last bullet in terms of the failure. They are saying failure to account for orthography and geographical location of the facility. Now, Chair, can the DPW explain what do they mean about that? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's take Babunguni. No, before, right, let's just take South. You want to add to it and then we'll come to you, Nguni?
Just sorry, there was another thing that you mentioned previously which didn't come out in this presentation, and that was the effect of weather, extreme weather, on the expiry or the completion of the project. Now, in both series and from Reinsdorp, the one dealing with, I think, rain and the other one dealing with heat, that was advanced as a reason for delay. I should have imagined that both heat and rain or any combination of them affected Brunflo as well. Why was it possible to avoid it in Brunflo and not avoid it in the others?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it's very much encouraging to hear that the DCS would stop to from time to time go to the site and say, no, this is not how we want it, this is how we want it, you know, amending their initial plan, which is, you know, worries me in terms of saying the need analysis, is it done properly? If it is done properly, why shall you, in the process of the construction, then you come and say, no, this is not how I wanted it. This is how I wanted it now. No, it's worrying, but it's encouraging to hear that there will be a new approach. No, I wanted to link the new generational prisons, you know, centers versus the need analysis. When you go and do the need analysis, don't you take that into consideration when you do that, before you can even, you know, call the architects to do those designs and to start to design the thing. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Nguni. Let's hand over to DPW to respond to this. Yes, ma'am.
On Van Reinsdorp, I'm not quite sure, and I'm honest about that. You're reading from the cost report of June 2012, if I'm correct. The change that happened, okay, you've got it. The change that happened that you're reading here, the security installation change from Nolita to JFE and the remeasurement, the 32 million rand. If I remember correctly, and I will have to verify, but I will check, it is basically, there was an original amount in the bills of quantities of 33 million. The change, the total became 36 million, if I can put it like that. So there was a change, and one of the reasons for the change from Nolita to JSE was compatibility to the system. It was a requirement from the client, in this case DCS, that they wanted specific type of installation. So we had to make some changes there. And the cost difference was basically 3.3 million rand. No, yeah, 3.3 million rand between the two. That's on that one. Then the revised design, the steel tables, were also a requirement from learning from what happened in the Kimberley project, and they said we have got to change the design because it has got to last. It wasn't, the original design did not give them the satisfaction that it is going to be as vandal proof as possible, and there were changes required on that one. The floor finish was also a requirement from the DCS team, really, because of the quality that they were getting at the Kimberley one, and they said, no, please change this. That was quite a costly one, but I can understand the change. I mean, if you're finding your floor finish that you're putting in is not going to give you the result, they ask us to change that. So that is reason. The weather, on all three...
Sorry, ma'am, before you go on to the weather.
Yeah.
Is it as simple as you're saying that halfway through, DPW comes back and says, we actually don't want pine, we want yellow wood or something like that because of the experience? What are the implications on the tender, the original tender? Because my understanding as a layman would say, we want this thing, we want it in time, and we want it at this color. It then opens it up to everybody. If halfway down the line we say, we actually don't want pine anymore, we want yellow wood, does that then not move or discriminate against other people that might not have pine and yellow wood? The question that I'm asking, Do you accept that this has a potential to manipulate the awarding of it? That's the question I'm asking, because a tender goes out publicly, it says we want red shoes. Halfway through the way you say we don't want red shoes anymore, we want yellow shoes. Does that not, one, open up for the original people to challenge because they tended on a certain criteria? That's the first one. But secondly, does it not also open up the door for manipulation? Because we would then know that it's only this person that can provide red shoes and not everybody else. That is our concern, because we can't just simply say it's a change. Corruption in this type of mega construction arrive, and are we not opening doors for that? I think that is what we want to understand, because if that is the case, then we need to close it immediately and report accordingly to Parliament. So on those changes, I just think we can't agree to make changes as easily as it sounds to me now that we make changes. Somebody just comes and says, I don't want this type of security, I want that type of security. What are the implications for the original tender that went out? And also the people that might have lost the tender. Do they have any recourse, or do we build this in terms of when we open up for people apply for the tender or something like that? What are the implications?
Can I attempt? The way I see it is that when we go out to tender, the tenderers are all tendering on exactly the same thing. So it's all apples with apples. So if you change the apple to a pear, it will be in that tender. You're not really, somebody else could not have offered you a pear, if I can put it like that, because you wanted apple. So everybody tenders on exactly the same level. So if you make the change afterwards, which in the construction industry happens quite regularly, that there would be a change. For instance, you like the floor finish. It has now been learned that floor finish is not hard enough. We've got to change. You're definitely not going to... no other tenderer can feel as if they could have offered us something else, because they couldn't. At the time of tender, they all offered us exactly the same thing.
Maybe I'm not making myself clear, ma'am. You say that we are putting out a tender for apples. Mm. You are an apple farmer, he's an apple farmer. So you both tender because it's for apples. Halfway down the line you say, we don't want apples anymore, we want pears. You are apple and a pear. When you tendered for apples, at that point you also had pears. However, the other farmer only had apples and he didn't have pears. Surely he then gets cut out of the system. Or am I not making sense? I want to be quite frank with you. Certain tenders are tailored for certain individuals. If you want me to be frank, certain tenders are tailored for certain individuals. So when you find out that this tender is won by Gwenya and not myself,
but you always wanted self to win it. You then manipulate the tender to cut out Ngwenya and to put self in the tender. That is what's happening in the construction industry. That is what's happening in correctional services, and we're asking the question, should we continue to turn a blind eye to that, or should we admit that this is what is happening or is the potential to happen, and how do we fix it up? That's the lesson that I am saying we must learn, not any other lesson.
I actually think Jack really understand what you're saying, and I can understand also where you come from. But as I say, I was looking at the floor finish, and this to me is not a one way I could feel that that could have, that there was any manipulation. I'm just going to answer. I'm just answering the weather one first. In all three of these facilities, there were weather delays, and Brandfly as well. And there were extensions of times granted for that. So it's not as if there is any difference. Obviously, currently we don't get weather delays anymore because they're working inside. But they are relevant. They were relevant to all three of these facilities.
Chair, it just seems to me that, we all, anybody who lives in the Western Cape knows that the lines up get hot. And it seemed to me bizarre that they could justify a delay by means of citing something they should have anticipated. Everybody knows that series get cold and wet. Is this not also a lesson that needs to be put down and the lessons learned, along with making sure that the site doesn't have hidden rocks and high water tables and all the other things that I would have thought any ordinary contractor in an ordinary circumstance, certainly anyone that takes risks on the private market, would have anticipated. I mean, if this had been a private undertaking, I don't think they would have put it down to experience. You know what I mean?
Can I answer? The JVCC contract, which is the contract that we're using, actually allows inclement weather. If no work can be done on that day and it's on the critical path, you've got to give an extension. So we haven't got a choice. The health and safety people advised us that anything above 42 degrees working outside becomes a problem. So we're adhering to what is the conditions that we've got to adhere to. And it's not taken lightly. For instance, if it's not on the critical path, we would not award that extension of time. So we will look at the program and look at it. Is it on a critical path or not? Otherwise, it won't happen. But it's a contractual issue. So then could go to the next question. On the survey, there was a survey done. There was a geotechnical survey done. The problem was the geotechnical survey that was done. The child holes that we dug was too far apart. And it happened. Why? That is, to me, still a strange question, that the soil conditions were not picked up completely. So specifically in Ceres, there was one area where in the end it was totally waterlogged and clay, which we did not pick up in the trial holes. That's why we said we have got to, in future, develop a program. We've got to talk to our head office as well and say to them, we cannot only do one trial hole, say, on 200 square meters. We have got to make it much, much more frequent so that we can make sure that we can catch all the type of different soil conditions. Now, also with the clay soil, if you do the trial hole in summer, and I don't think that was anticipated, it would be different water levels than what we got in winter. And that was also part of our problem, which we have got to look at in the future. We accept the fact that we should have done that more comprehensive. And that's the same, what we've meant with topography is really what we're meaning, the soil conditions as well. The geographical location of the two facilities is that when they did the estimates originally, and when we anticipated, we did not expect that there would be huge price differences in the end because of the areas that they are far away from the city. But it did come out in the end. So that's also, we thought because of the size of the project that contractors will be able to absorb that kind of distance because they're going up in mass. but that did have an influence in the end on our price. I actually do think, sir, on the needs analysis, the needs analysis that we get on a project like that is, for instance, the area that we've got to provide, how much room per user can, shall I say, must be provided. So that is where the needs analysis stops in a way. It would, I think Robert could actually add a little bit more here. And yes, that need hasn't really changed. The area that is required, that hasn't really changed. What has changed is, you could say, in the detail. That's really where the changes have taken place, in finishes and that type of thing. That's really where the changes have taken place. Okay. Thank you.
Somebody wants to... Yes. Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, I'm going to call upon the Chief Director Project to expand on the issue of variation orders. If I can use a simple example, when constructing a house, the owner for whom it's being built may decide during the construction, instead of using this tap that he had originally thought of, can he have another style of tap? You will always have these kinds of variations. The issue here is, up to what limit is it acceptable, and what is the cutting line where it actually means that you could have got a different tender at a different price. The issue of the variation in terms of the change of the floor finish would have been triggered by the client based on the experience of what was happening. The question is, was it materially significant in terms of the award of the tender, and would it have prejudiced anybody else? Mr. Molozzi will explain how the department has variation order thresholds and limits, and in fact at some point we even have to say to the client, we're very sorry, it cannot be accommodated in this tender. We have to register a separate project, a new contractor, get a new project going. These are the kind of debates that happen on an ongoing basis on a project. Mr. Molozzi, over to you, if you don't mind expanding a bit on the details of how variation orders work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Pascoe. Good morning, honorable members. The issue of variation orders is a very, very, very complex in a matter to say that most of the time, or in generic, we allow, when we award a tender, we make a provision for 5% of the contract value as an allowance for the engineer, the architect, to use that allowance to address technical challenges during construction. But in a matter whereby the client or the user wants to introduce new features or wants to change the specification, in most cases it has a material changes to the project. We've set a threshold to say that if the changes are at 20%, the approval should then be at the level of a national bid adjudication committee to approve that change or increase of the scope. Further, the clients must then, in addition to that, confirm that they will cover the cost of such a requirement. Also, in terms of various form of contracts, GCC, JPCC, then introduces the allowance to say if the change of scope reaches 20% plus of the value, then the contractor has the right to renegotiate the rate or the tender price, which then also put the department in a more problematic situation. Other contractors would elect to use the same rate as they tendered for, even if the scope of work increases. But there are sometimes issues whereby we totally introduce a new element, which we call as an unscheduled tender. What we try to say is that the supplier or the contractor should then have to go and search for 3 quotations minimum, and then the quantity surveyor must adjudicate the cost effective solution or the price that we get from the market. But all in all, we can simply say we are unable at the moment to control the rate of variation orders, especially if the requests are made from the user client. The question that was raised by the chairperson, whether when we change the suppliers, what are the consequences to the market, is a valid question, is a valid concern, because in particular where you have, for an example, in a security industry whereby you don't have many players, you either have two or three players and all their suppliers are patented. When you change from what was allowed in a bill of quantity and opt for another, it means that you abandon the original bidder and go to the alternative supplier. Although we would say that the risk is then transferred to the main contractor because he's the one who has to go and search or negotiate those deals. But maybe fortunately, we haven't had any legal challenge from suppliers to say that your decision to change your scope has prejudiced me, my business, in terms of the investment that I made with a view that I will participate in the contract which was awarded either as a private supplier or as a subcontractor. So it's a bit problematic indeed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the message that we are sending to correctional services, because that's the only area we know and that's the area we're talking to now, it is a security industry. We do know that very many of the products are patented. There's a certain fence that only one company makes in this country. There's a certain surveillance that only one company makes in this country. And if our tenders then are tailored for that specific thing, in essence, we are giving that job to that person, whoever it is. I'm saying it to you so that you understand that we understand this thing. And we receive complaints on a daily basis. We are saying to you, COO, in correctional services specifically, we would want to mitigate these type of things. And that is why I raised the question. You know, if my calculations are correct and I was following you correctly, if you should take these three tenders, the original cost was about 750 million, 747 million, 212, 220 and 350. Your escalations are 29, 82 and 90, that's about 200 million. That's a massive jump from the original one. It's a massive jump from the original one. And we want government to understand that it opens the door for manipulation. We want you to understand that we are aware that it opens the door for manipulation. And we can't allow this thing to happen as Parliament. So that's, I think that's the point we're making. That's the reason why we met you, just purely from the financial side. Of course, COO from the service delivery side, we cannot continue to have projects that are delayed by 2 years because of the pressure of overcrowding, because of the pressure of lack of service delivery when it comes to rehabilitation and so on. It's just a lose-lose situation for all of us. I think that's the message we're sending. We are saying that we will monitor this thing going forward. We do know that in the budget that we approved, there was a proposal for 5 new facilities going forward. We cannot ever sit with this scenario going forward. We can never sit with this scenario going forward. If our planning is that they will be handed over on that day, it means everything else kicks in from that day. And a delay then has those implications. I think that was the message that we wanted to send on this one. And that you understand our sentiment and that we get a better sense of where we're going to. But let's allow one more round of questions and then we'll close this matter. Let's start with Baba Kwele because you've not spoken. Mr. Self and then Nguni, you will be the final one. We will allow DPW and DCS to make their final comments on this matter and we'll move on. Baba Kwele.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I just want to find out from DPW.
if we have received the revised completion date from a funding stock contractor, and when is that date? If not, what have you done to follow up the matter? Yes, sir. Yes, I'm sir. My interest is how will the DCS ensure that they no longer bring additional work or change the scope of work? Because I had the, I can't remember the surname well, saying that we're going to try to ensure that we no longer interfere or interrupt. I'm just there. I just want to know how are they going to do it.
Yes. Two questions. The first one relates to the serious one, and again speaking to the financial report that we were given for June. What is the meaning of the of the statement that is contained in the financial report where it says project costs exceeds national treasury limit? What does that mean? Because that's what it says here. Secondly, just on a more general note and flowing from what you said, Chair, are we now to understand that as a result of the experience that was learnt at Kimberley, the experience that was learnt at the three prisons that we're talking about here, that we could then anticipate that if all the procedures were then put in place that were talked about, we would get a prison built on time with a minimum of variation, so that we can budget more accurately, and where you would really have a market in which everybody was competing equally for the Apple contract, if I can extend the analogy that you were using. Are we to understand then that that would be the process that would be followed when these new contracts go out for tender? Because I don't want to be sitting here in 5 years' time and find that we're constructing a new prison in Nigel and we've got the same story all over again, that we've had delays because of weather, that we've had delays because we didn't anticipate that there would be a slab of rock, that we didn't anticipate that there would be a floor, type of flooring that we needed, and all the other things that have gone into delaying these contracts. Thank you.
On the completion date for Van Rijnsdorp, the completion date that was given to us, actually, like last week, is at the end of November this year. We are having a meeting with a contractor, just to give you an idea, on Monday, this coming Monday, whereby we are interrogating his completion because there's still a few things that we are worried about. One of them is the security system must have a 330-hour uninterrupted running to make sure that it works. And we are interrogating that whole program of completion because they're in the snagging. They've got to complete all the snagging list, and this has to happen. So we're having a meeting on Monday with a contractor exactly to just to make sure that everything is in place where this is concerned. I continue with the one for DPW because the other one question was for DCS. On the financial report, about in June 2011, National Treasury came out with a regulation whereby wherever we exceed 20% of the original value, it becomes something that must be reported to National Treasury. That has changed a little bit lately because what the contractual issues, like for instance the normal cost price escalation, is no longer relevant in it. So, but our cost report just indicates to us you're reaching limits so that we know whether it should be reported or not. That's really the indication that we're giving them. I think the other two questions were for DCS.
Yes.
Yeah.
Honourable Chairpersons, honourable members, I think we'd like to respond to various of the questions. From when we did the site visit at Bronfley, we had a similar discussion around the percentage increases on the project and the time frames. What we tried to explain there, which can easily confuse people, is that when you show the contract price as reflected here, as explained earlier, there is contractual escalation, which is nothing went wrong, it's just a normal contraction, so it's allowed in the project budget. And part of that is the 5% allowed. And what we suggested in future is that we rather report against showing the normal escalation that was planned for, budget for, nobody did anything wrong, it's just according to the contract, no extra time, just the normal contract, so that from there we can see, as you had a normal project, you had a project budget at the start, then you measure it actually against the budget you had, because it gets the wrong impression. You get the impression that the escalation is already in the contract, nobody did anything wrong, that that's already on top of everything, which gives a skewed picture. And I think it's important just to note, we did explain it in the previous time, that was a challenge. Similarly, we had the issue about going to limit costs around solar installations. It's quite a substantial installation, but it's investment. Now with the increase in tariffs of electricity, we have turned around about 6 years, it's come down to that. So we're investing more money now, but we get a return on that within 6 years. So we can defend a lot of these things as very long-term proper thinking. Similarly, what we experienced on epoxy that was specified at Kimberley, it had a very quick, short-lived life expand. Then we asked Public Works as the experts to say, what are your proposals, seeing the challenges in kitchens, seeing it in the high traffic areas, what would you suggest? So that we don't spend a lot of money but still don't have the benefits. Then they proposed this product that they invested, which is looking like it looks like a good product. We'll have to test it over time. But that is those additional investment that actually in the interest of government. So it's well assessed, well calculated based on that. Similarly, there was a lot of challenges in the documentation, detailed documentation of the prototype. So there's no errors from necessarily from the regional office and the consultants. They got a standard document that was done, a prototype. On that prototype, inherent in the details, there were some inconsistencies which have resulted in quite a lot of VO. So not all of these, or I would say a big part of this, would you could bring back to the prototype challenges which we picked up at Kimberley and which were unfortunately already attended, so they had to correct that at that stage. So to address that, yes, we are working very hard to try and get the quality control. And in our process flow, we are proposing to have a scoping committee which looks at the beginning. Yes, we do the scope of the facilities, but we had a challenge where they changed at Kimberley the bakery and that caused some delays. Now we're saying that detail must be decided on, we lock that down, nobody changes anything after that too. So there's a very detailed assessment before so that we commit ourselves and we take in that and live with what we've committed ourselves. So look, going forward to these new centres of the replacing the 15,000 beds that would have been done with the TPP, so that when we do those projects, we don't have these challenges and reoccurrence of that and causing any delays. But the large part, it's not all because of these years. This is part of the documentation team that was done during the moving forward with these projects. If I can comment on the also on the contractual the time frames, the Department of Public Works is using the JBCC contract. Previously, we used the contract. That contract did exactly what the Honourable Chairperson said. Why don't we allow for things you can foresee, which would be for the benefit of everybody? But that contract was like that. They had to allow for the average rainfall. So if it's raining more than average, he would be allowed to do that. Unfortunately, this JBCC contract You see a contact here, it's actually, and that's what we suggested, we should not give you that date because you know it's going to rain. So we should say, what is the average day? We should add that to that and actually say, what is the projected date from the start? And that would be our benchmark, because if people get lost here and think there's somebody that did something wrong with, unfortunately, we're using the new WCCC contract, which got its benefits, but one of the challenges there, the expectations is created that when you say the completion date, it should be finished, but it's not the case. We know from the start that's not the completion date. It should be the average days on top of that, because we know we have to give them the days as explained. On top, so we should actually rather give you the expected days, because that would be, if you do it for a client's planning purposes, you would actually report that, because you would add 2 years rainfall for a two-year contract. So that would be, for me, just to explain that some of the things gives you that impression there's more days extra, with some of those days is actually just because of the structure of the contract. Then on just on the security, yes, the security contract, I think what has happened here and shown here, there was a provisional sum in the contract, so everybody tended to the same amount. After that, they had to go out according to public works processes to allow for the bidding of that security specifications, and we had discussions with in the department already, and we have adjusted some of the security tenders to make sure that these concerns, there's some concerns raised, and we've already addressed some of those concerns going forward in future projects, that people feel that it's limiting the possibility of some tenders. So we've already looked at that options. But the tenders was awarded according to the specifications, and obviously if there's anything that my colleagues have to look at their specifications to ensure that there's no limitation unfairly, then we will revisit those specifications accordingly. But the award would be in terms of specifications, not specifically expecting a person to do it, but rather compliance to the specifications. But we note that the criticism of that, there's a view that people see that as possibly limiting possible tenderers to that. And from the just on closing from our side, I think we have revisiting our whole process flow to actually, with the request of getting capacity in the department, to actually be able to do better oversight from ourselves, because currently we've got serious challenges in that situation, but is to actually address all these concerns noted from everyone around these issues. But I think from our point of view, moving forward with these new tenders, there should be no excuse to have the same mistakes from our side.
Does DPW want to make any closing remarks? Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, the Department is extremely grateful for the dialogue and the opportunity to have engaged on these very critical projects. And we take the comments and suggestions and questions back as opportunity for us to ensure that moving forward we achieve the desired state as the Honourable Member exemplified. The challenge here was that we had a prototype which in itself was still going through some form of testing. There were lessons to be learned on how you take a prototype and adapt it to three other prisons, which brought around a new series of prototypes, if you like. The lesson for us, which is the most significant, is that to bring certainty to these projects moving forward, we have to get the detailed planning and specifications correct up front. By the time we go to tender, we must know what's in that project. Within the limits of the variations, which are the normal trade allowances, but there should not be these big variations or deviations, if you like. And that is certainly what we will strive to achieve moving forward. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
CIO, do you want to say anything in terms of DCS?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say that we have noted the comments as raised, but also to emphasize that with this new generation facilities, we believe that the challenges that were there will assist us in planning the way forward, and definitely we will take from our own lessons that we have learned And one hopes that going forward with the new facilities that are currently in the pipeline, we will, as much as possible, avoid the unnecessary variations. But just to say that it was learning from experience and an effort to not to commit the same mistakes in all the facilities. But we do take the comments of the members and the concerns that are raised. We do take them very seriously. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We've had two meetings on this matter now, at least. And it seems like the program is still going on, at least until November in one of them. I don't think that we're going to call you back in this form again. But what we do require, by the end of this year, end of November, because you indicated November to Mr. Bella's question, we need a joint report that gives us the state of affairs of these three facilities at that point. Because I don't think we want to call another joint meeting to have this discussion. But it doesn't mean that we're going to take our eye off the ball or take it off the agenda. We would like you, and Cindy is not going to remind you about this because we are here. We would want a joint report from DPW and DCS at the end of November, saying in terms of Ceres, Brandfly, and Van Rensdorp, this is the situation. Really three questions that we want answered. Is it completed? Is it handed over? And of course, the lessons learned is something that we will take going forward with the others. But in this one, is it completed? If not, when is it going to be completed? What are the implications on service delivery, and how are we mitigating those influences on service, those unintended consequences on service delivery? Ours, at the end of the day, is about the rehabilitation and managing overcrowding. If everything else government does has a negative impact on overcrowding and on rehabilitation, expect this committee to be vocal about it. Expect this committee to be vocal about it. So ultimately, that's what we want answered from a joint report signed off by both relevant authorities in terms of Van Rensdorp, Ceres, and Brandfly. Thank you very much. DPW, you are free to stay if you so wish, or you're also free to move on. So we will allow a 3-minute break and then carry on with the others so that we don't have interruptions. The second and final item on our agenda, as I indicated earlier on, was to have a discussion on the feasibility and appropriateness of using closed circuit TV in correction and remand detention cells. This initiative is probably close to a year old. And this initiative is informed by our observations during our oversight visits and deputations or letters that we receive from inmates, and also the department. In essence, our view as the committee was that we need to use technology to improve service delivery. And in this instance, your core mandate as DCS is one of security of inmate and official and rehabilitation. And our own view is that there cannot be rehabilitation in an environment where human rights are abused with impunity. So even if I went to school from 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock at night, but I got back to my cell at 5 o'clock when officials left and the gangsters took over and raped me or forced me to put contraband up all sorts of body oracles and so on, there cannot be any rehabilitation. The fact that we have heard from officials that there are challenges in terms of staffing. We also thought that closed-circuit television would assist in that regard. We then embarked on an interaction with stakeholders. To date, I think we've seen no less than 5 or 6 of the key stakeholders. Originally, they were skeptical around the possible challenges on constitution, but I think that as I speak, many people have now agreed that the risks of not doing it far outweigh the risks, or the risks of putting CCTV, notwithstanding possible challenges, far outweigh the risks of not doing it in terms of the effect that it has on the inmate and on society as a whole. I'm not sure that I have heard, and members, if they have, might raise it, I am not sure that I have heard any sort of protest or complaint, even from the inmates. Even from the inmates, because we've raised it with the inmates. So that's where we act in terms of the committee. And we thought that before we finalize our own report, which we have the right to do as a portfolio committee, we thought it was prudent to afford the experts an opportunity, maybe also just to share with us. There's nothing that's cast in stone. But all the views, both negative and positive, both pro and con, enrich the final product that's going to come out. That's what it was about. Nothing about if you say yes, therefore you'll be bound to it and therefore have signed onto it. It's really a fact-finding mission. We as a committee will, behind closed doors, sit as a committee and look at all these things, including getting legal advice and so on. So we afforded everybody an opportunity. They have done so. And we've not in any way said, yes, we accept or we don't accept your recommendations. It's just part of a fact-finding mission. And the same would apply to yourself. We're not going to criticize. We just afford you an opportunity to say what you want to say, ask for questions of clarity, and factor that into our own input. So that's really what it was about, or that's really what we think it is. However, if you're not in a position to do that, or uncomfortable about doing it, or whatever the reason might be, that is also okay. I don't think there's any obligation on anybody to do anything or say anything. It was just an honest invitation on our side to afford you a voice, as we've afforded all South Africans. So that's where we're at, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm not sure, between DCS and the inspecting judge, if indeed you want to participate. If you do, we will note whatever you're saying. If you don't, we will also thank you for your attention. Close the meeting, and very soon the committee will then sit and deliberate on its own behind closed doors. When I say behind closed doors, without any input from other people, you are certainly welcome to observe, but we will on our own discuss the matter and come up with a recommendation. So that's the objective of this session. So it really is a 5 minute or 10 minute presentation. If there's any presentation, Cindy will capture your views, and then it will be factored into everything else that has come out. So that is it. So let's hand over to you, COO, and also to Mr. Racha, if there's anything from your side. Members might just, we'll limit members to ask questions of clarity as opposed to getting into discussions and debates, and then we'll move on from there. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, I think our point of departure, Chairperson, is that yes, we do want to participate in the debate. We do want to participate in the discussion regarding the appropriateness of using CCTV cameras in our facilities. Having said that, I must say that we came to this meeting not with a formal presentation, that we can say we are presenting to you, but we came ready to engage in discussions and share also our own views. The reason why I'm putting it in this manner is that as a department, we have not yet done a proper feasibility study on the feasibility and appropriateness of using this technology. Therefore, as DCS, we have not yet taken a formal management position on the use of CCTV cameras. Chairperson would recall that 3 weeks ago, Minister made his own comments in the portfolio committee and also indicated that a pronouncement will be made in this regard. I must say that pronouncement has not yet been made, but it is important to note that there is a desktop research that has been done to look at the advantages and disadvantages of using CCTV in our facilities, and that document is still in its very raw format. It's still a draft. It is a discussion document which we cannot say is a position of the department. That is why we are skeptical to make that presentation, because that document has not found its way into the management meeting of DCS and also the executive meeting where the minister sits and chairs that meeting. So that is why we were skeptical to make a formal presentation. But as colleagues that are here with me, we agreed with the National Commissioner that we will come, we will engage in discussions. People are free to say, based on that desktop that has been done, what are the pros, what are the cons, what are the advantages and disadvantages, and take that discussion further. But we would still want to have an opportunity where we engage thoroughly within DCS, within management, so that when we present a position, we can say this is what the department is recommending, or these are the views of the department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Do you guys want to... Yeah?
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps I should tender an apology for not making the written submission on an earlier occasion. The inspector has debated it, has crystallized some of our views on paper, and it had been done some time ago, the author and the coordinator being my colleague, Mr. D'Souza. What we will do, and apologize again for not making this available earlier, but with your permission, I'd like Mr. D'Souza to just briefly speak to some of the issues that he's raised from his paper, and then make the paper available to you immediately on us getting back to the office. With your permission.
Thank you for that, Honourable Chair and members. What the position of the Judicial Inspectorate is first of all, we can say that we support any measure that improves the safety of inmates as well as the conditions in correctional centres, obviously. But before we can implement CCTV, there must be a feasibility study, just like DCS said earlier, regarding inter alia the suitability of the correctional centres structure, the cost, the maintenance of the surveillance system, the staffing and the training of officials to man control the rooms and all things like that. Then, regarding privacy, we are not really worried about privacy in communal cells, because there's not really a right or how can I say, not an absolute right to privacy, especially if you're in a communal cell. You don't have the expectation to be private, except in the bathroom area. I think that will be an exception. And then, you can just see,
then obviously there should be guard against making those images available or public, because then you're going to infringe on the inmates' rights. We don't want to see images of inmates on YouTube or things like that. And let me just see. The exception to the rule will be the so-called suicide watch cells. I think we should ask that CCTV, even in the bathroom areas, should be installed there, because most of inmates who commit suicide do it in the bathroom areas. And I think that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody wants to ask questions of clarity or anything? Or can I correctly say that we've noted the issues raised by yourself? Thank you very much, sir. We certainly will factor that into our own deliberations and discussions. Ma'am, in terms of DCS's participation, we'll have to find a way of somehow having an engagement. But as I indicated earlier on, at our level, we are now ready to deliberate on all these matters because we've received from all stakeholders. We are not clear as to whichever decision we take, where does it go to from there. But I mean, that will obviously be informed by exactly how far do our powers extend and all the issues that you've brought on board. But I think we've reached the end of our fact-finding missions, to call it that. All that remains is for us to then conjure up a argument that we think will stand the test of time, regardless of where the challenges come from, as the portfolio committee. And at that point, we will then make public whatever our views are and defend it accordingly. So thank you very much. We meet again with the department on Wednesday, I think, for the quarterly report. Until then, we can safely say that the business of Correctional Services Portfolio Committee is over. Thank you very much to DCS. Thank you very much to the Inspecting Judge's Office, Ministry, and to all our colleagues and friends that have been here. Thank you very much. Next week we will deal with the quarterly report. Thank you so much. Bye.